So as his job title, he gave me senior paleontologist. I think my English sucks as well. Sorry for that. But you know, it's really a very interesting presentation about what happens if you believe in marketing.
First of all, about being paleontologist, it's a joke. I'm not a paleontologist, I just feel like one, talking about True Cluster and True 64, and also being the last speaker. It's my job to bore you to death, which I probably will, as I'm not hell of a speaker. So I'll be briefly talking about True Cluster architecture and how does DFS comes into the picture. If you read the abstract, it's more about MS-DFS and True Cluster environment. And then I'll also talk about multiple Samba instances, how and why we run it in the True Cluster environment. And if you have time, we'll also talk about a bit about Windows and how do they let you down as well. It's not much to speak about True Cluster, it's history or future, just that it's basically dead end. HP promised to discontinue it and it eventually will. This actually makes us feel sad because, in our opinion, it's by far most mature cluster technology with unprecedented feature set. But it's life in kicking, and naturally when the promises it to excel in everything, I bet if it was making sandwiches, it probably would be the best sandwiches in the world. So I just depicted two node cluster with interconnect and shared storage area network. First thing that you see or learn about True Cluster is so-called NetRAIN or redundant array of internet network interfaces. This is probably one of the most those features I would miss most if True Cluster is gone. It works like that you have a bunch of virtual interfaces, and you elect or assign an ARP master role for every node. It's not like some node takes all incoming traffic being ARP master, but you spread your virtual interfaces across the nodes. That gives us high availability. For example, if some particular network interface fails or just a cable is pulled out, ARP master will be transparently migrated to another node, and this will be done without tearing down the TCP connection. It also provides for load balancing. Incoming connections are distributed among the nodes in round-robin manner. Though you can assign a weight to each node and say, for example, that node M will take third part of the connections, if not all of them, that's also an option. All these virtual interfaces are totally transparent to the application. They are available on all nodes, and application is free to bind to it and listen to it. This slide in particular, it doesn't really belong here because SMBD is not True Cluster component, so that we can just skip it. I mean, if you're interested, you can read it later. Next key component of True Cluster is True Cluster is cluster file system layer. Why is it layer? Because it's actually not some kind of format, on disk format. It's rather a piece of software that places itself between application, the real file system driver, and block cache, and serves as a clearing house between all these components, synchronizing access to the shared storage. And it also carries out such important function as it ensures on-disk structures consistency, takes care of inode updates. It also takes care of file extent allocation. And most importantly, this is what cluster file system layer sort of excels at. It maintains the individual node block caches coherent across the cluster. In practice, it means that if you have a file opened and two nodes and one is writing down something, then it has to invalidate the cache on another node so that if it needs that data, it has to go to the storage and refetch the data. It's designed scalable, and this is achieved by assigning or electing the clearinghouse or hereafter master on per file system basis. That is, it's not like in other products. For example, if you look at IRIX cluster XFS or Veritas, they have such a clearinghouse or master that is assigned for all file systems in the cluster. It's not the case in TrueCluster. You can spread this role against among several nodes, thus improving load balancing and so on. Cluster file system also provides for high availability. If one node fails, then corresponding masters are transparently re-elected and relocated to other nodes, and this is done without disrupting the I/O. One thing to understand about cluster file system layer is that it introduces asymmetricity. That is, you have master-slave relationship between nodes. In particular, the protocol that ensures the coherent block cache coherency is token-based, which means that there is a lot of short transaction going on between nodes. And that means that IO transactions are effectively bound to interconnect latency. And that's what we, that is one of the most important lessons that we learned, that interconnect latency is a governing factor for performance of IO intensive applications such as Samba. Why Samba is IO intensive, we'll see it in a minute. So basically what I was just saying, it's possible to just have it on picture. So that if two clients are after the same data in the same file system, one client can be directly dispatched through the node N and get the result. Another client would be load balanced to another node. There it will have to get to that one, get tokens. They probably will have several transactions. Then they'll get data. Data can get this way, but in most cases it will get that way. That means that on IO path, we have a lot of extra latency, which will affect the performance. And what vendor didn't tell us is that performance degradation for this non-preferred path is noticeable for certain IO mixes. And noticeable doesn't mean like 20 or 30%. It can be a factor of 2 or even more. And unfortunately, IO mix incurred by Windows Explorer or Office applications typically falls to this category. I wrote thanks to user interface appeal, because as you know, every file in Windows Explorer has to have an icon. Save as dialog in Office application will try to predict what you're about to type, which is done by traversing a directory or looking at the index history dot file or something like that. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that Windows desktop users are not happy with non-preferred path, and it gets worse. Even for preferred path, we could notice the performance degradation when compared to standalone system that is without CFS for specific IO mixes. And unfortunately, Samba TDB IO typically falls to this, I would call it adverse category, because it's hostile. In other words, Windows desktop users are hardly happy even with preferred path. And this especially holds true for Ethernet interconnect, which has a higher latency. So that no matter what we do, we are screwed. It's possible to bypass CFS at mount time, that is per file system basis, but can we actually afford trading high availability for performance. First of all, it doesn't work at all for user files. But we figured that it's actually possible to bypass CFS and get native I/O performance as it was just a disk, at least for LOXDDB databases, if and only if clients could be somehow directed to the same node, which would naturally be the preferred path node on per-share basis. So is it reasonable or not? Well, nobody shares a slash directory, right? Meaning that it's more than common that share doesn't span more than file system, and it holds virtually 100% true for home directories. Or at least we might be empowered to ensure that by configuring our system. After all, it's our system. So wouldn't it be possible to use DFS to direct clients to CFS master? Well, if it would be impossible, I probably wouldn't be standing here, right? Now recall that NetRain distributes incoming connections in round-robin manner with assign and weights to each node. Also recall that it's totally transparent to the application, meaning that every SMBD daemon will be listening to all these virtual interfaces. And on this picture, bar thickness represents weight assigned to the node, which effectively depicts where incoming connections can or will be dispatched. So imagine the Windows client comes in and says he wants to connect to home directory. Naturally, it goes through this virtual interface. It's uniform, which means that every node is free to take the request. So it happened to be the second one this very moment. So client goes ahead and asks, is there a DFS referral for this share? Home dear, Twitch. SMBD takes time to figure out who is the CFS master for the file system that contains this home directory and what its preferred interface. So it happened to be the third one. It should be noted that CFS master role is so to say, long-running role. That is, it doesn't change very often. It changes when this node fails or rebooted, or CFS master role is manually reassigned by administrator. So it's very good candidate to tell to the client that yes, there is DFS referral for home directory, but you should be talking to this virtual interface. Now this inverse T configuration or distinguished peak ensures that all requests to home dir will be dispatched to the third node and not somewhere else. That means we got it right. User I/O always goes through the preferred path. And we also have an opportunity to isolate the LOXDDB files on a CFS-free partition, which will ensure the optimal performance. So we managed to turn it to win-win situation. There are some candies in the back as well. I mean, one can wonder, why is it inverse T at all? Why would it be just a plain virtual interface? Well, this is done for high availability. If the third node NIC fails, the traffic will be transparently redirected through another node, again, without disrupting the tearing down the TCP connection. It will add some extra network latency, but it's not actually a big deal, as we figured. But most importantly, the LOXDDB and block cache, that is all the data that is what was not committed to the disk storage yet, or readily available for reuse, will remain where they belong at CFS master. This also gives us opportunity to load balance on per file system level. That is, if we feel that the node is overloaded, we can just move file system and clients will follow after DFS referral timeout, which is hard-coded in Samba. Yes? Yes, it's yes. Yes. But I mean, when you tear down the connection, it has to reestablish the connection anyway. And you can expect, I mean, most applications will get IO error anyway, and you will have to restart it. For example, copying, Word will get IO error. That means that you have to restart application. That means that you will have to reclaim the logs and so on and so forth. So yes, it's actually, one can argue that it's a weak part, but we take the risk consciously. At least we haven't run into any application that would actually suffer from the fact that TDB file would reside, would be lost upon node failure. I mean, you do get the IO errors, but users can live with that. So unfortunately, it can be done with the stock Samba. We had to modify the source code. I don't know how many are familiar with this option, MSF proxy parameter, which is per share. Basically, it does this thing that you can just say that whenever anybody asks for DFS referral for this share, it's per share, you should be directing him to talk to somebody else. I mean, normally this option would look like double backslash node name backslash share or path or whatever. So we choose to program Samba to recognize the dot as notion of self-referral. That is, whenever you ask for home directory, it will direct to the node at the same cluster to the same home directory, but to the preferred path, naturally. And we also had to implement the how do we identify the CFS master, which unfortunately is done with unpublished IP. I don't know if I can put this code, for example, on web. I probably wouldn't dare. But if anybody's interested, I can provide it on explicit request. Then we have something that we call multiple instances. The system is expensive, and in order to justify it, we have to accommodate as much users as possible. But unfortunately, they might have totally contradicting demands. For example, they can come from totally different domains which don't have any trust between each other. We have chosen to meet their demands as well. Then even dedicated purpose services, for example, file server or print server, are likely to require different setups. For example, file server would commonly be load balanced or spread across all the nodes in the cluster, while print server would more likely be running on single nodes and will be just failover group, which will be grouped with LPD or CUBS daemon. So we just replicate the stuff. Just make a shadow of it. Independent WIFs, independent Samba daemons. But we had some strange requirements, and we figured that we would like the file system layout to look like this. That is, we have user Samba, then we have variable version, which would give us opportunity to update or roll back Samba very quickly. Then naturally we'll have bin, sbin, and lib with DFS modules, so that belong to the same version. Then we would naturally have to have variable winbind pipe, so that two Samba instances can authenticate against different domains. And then we would like to have variable placeholder for configuration file, startup file, and private and logs files, but which would be invariant to the version. So we configure it like this. We just put version into the prefix. Then we parameterize the config dir. It also, the rest is also had to be coded into the Samba. That is, we had to code this shell idioms, two shell idioms into Samba. In order to, first one, in order to ensure that we can communicate with the joint domains, and another one to provide the backward compatibility. So here is our RC SMBD startup file. Here you have a taste for how easy it is to upgrade, roll back, just comment in, comment out. These two you should recognize from the previous slide. This one will govern where which pipe the WinBindD will be listening at. And this one, as you can see, will identify the set of the configuration files. Note that we also managed to figure out how to configure the instances to talk to different KDCs and so on and so forth. SMBconf, it's really nothing special. All the values could as well be just hard-coded, but as an eye candy, we just use the environment variables that we set in startup script. So we have an expensive system with fancy interconnect. We have cool DFS load balancer. We serve multiple user communities for multiple domains. And probably I'll just stop there because of lack of time. The rest, I mean, will be available online if you are really interested in figuring out how Windows let us down. Then you can look at it. Thank you. Are there any questions?
Any questions at this point? None. Well, thank you very much then. And that was the last presentation. Actually, not very boring. So
I did my best.
Yeah, it was good. I think. And, probably the cases, even independent of true 64 and true cluster, can come up in other cluster setups. Yeah. So, you know.
There was also a slide about future plans, and we do plan to review this experience in other cluster designs as well. Right.
Good luck with that. All right, so there's a panel discussion now in the other room.